Thank you, Elaine. Well, I have an easy job today because Michael will kick off the call, and therefore, without any further ado, I hand over directly to him.
Great, Oliver, thanks very much. Good afternoon to all participants from Europe, and good morning to those ones who are dialing in from the US. Thank you very much for joining this conference call. And we would use this call to inform you about the management changes at PIMCO and give you the opportunity, obviously, to address your questions. Before we start, let me introduce my colleagues who are joining us today. I'm here in Munich with Dieter Wemmer, and Doug Hodge, the CEO of PIMCO, has dialed in from Newport Beach, where it's 6 a.m. in the morning right now. We will structure the call as follows. I will give you a short introduction and my perspective on the changes at PIMCO last Friday. I will then hand over to Doug, who will give you more details about the situation at PIMCO. Finally, Dieter will comment on potential implications for Allianz as far as he can at this point in time. And then we'll address your questions. Now, let me start with one statement here to give us a little bit focus for this call. As we were not given any indication that Bill Gross' departure last week was related to the ongoing SEC investigation, for the sake of time, we will today only focus on the management changes at PIMCO. Now let me speak about the PIMCO CIO transition. While we were not expecting Bill's resignation, we were still very well prepared. We started this preparation already after Mohamed El Arian's departure by addressing the corporate structure at PIMCO. The new management investment structure was put in place in January, and last Friday, PIMCO's thorough succession planning allowed immediate reaction. Within a couple of hours, Stephen Iverson was appointed new group CIO, and I think this transition process was managed very professionally. I have every confidence in the executive leadership of PIMCO with Doug Hodge as CEO and Jay Jacobs as president. The same holds true for Dan Iverson as group CIO and the entire CIO leadership team. We are very confident this team will carry the success and strengths of PIMCO to the future. Now I'm coming to what we can say about flows and profit. There's only been one market day since the resignation of Bill Gross at PIMCO, so it's too early to provide an estimate on potential outflows and subsequent impact on profits. We might expect some redemptions, but it's really too early to quantify that. But I know that PIMCO will work very hard to retain clients. They have an incredible, capable fixed income team, and I believe that clients will be well served in staying invested in PIMCO. We will provide you with October flow numbers when we publish our Q3 results of November 7. I would also like to point out that many of you have addressed the question of key man risk and PIMCO succession many times with us over the last 12 months. And the question of potential redemptions in such an event was also frequently mentioned. But now, before we go into more of this, let Doug Hodge, the CEO of PIMCO, explain the situation from PIMCO's point of view. Doug, please.
Michael, thank you, and good afternoon and good morning to all of you who are on the call with us. So I'm going to cover three areas in my opening remarks. First, PIMCO's succession planning and process. Secondly, PIMCO's investment leadership team. And then thirdly, the client outreach and the client reactions which we have gathered so far. So let me first turn to succession planning. But before I even begin, I think it's important to first acknowledge that Bill Gross is a uniquely talented investor with an incredible track record of success. And over the course of 43 years, he contributed to the growth of an extraordinary firm with world-class investors focused on value-added investment management services for our clients. However, it became clear over the course of this year that PIMCO's leadership and Bill had fundamental differences about how to take PIMCO forward. And as a part of PIMCO's responsibilities to our clients, our employees, and our parent company, PIMCO developed and updated a fully specified succession plan to ensure that we were well prepared to manage a seamless leadership transition in his portfolio management team should Bill decide to leave. And on Friday, Bill announced his resignation, that he was leaving PIMCO immediately, and our succession plan was subsequently executed and announced. So let me turn to our investment leadership team. As we announced on Friday afternoon, PIMCO's management board, which is comprised of all the managing directors of PIMCO, by unanimous consent confirmed Dan Iveson as the firm's group CIO, joining five additional CIOs, each of whom are proven investors with a long and successful track record. So Dan Iveson became our group CIO. Andrew Balls, who is in London, became the CIO of Global Fixed Income. Mark Kiesel, resident here in Newport Beach, CIO of Global Credit. Scott Mather, also here in California, CIO of Total Return Strategies. Mihir Wara, CIO of Real Return and Asset Allocation. And then finally, Virginie Maisonneuve, who is also in London, CIO of Global Equities. This is an extremely talented group. It includes two portfolio managers who have been recognized as Fixed Income Manager of the Year by Morningstar over the last 2 years. Dan Iveson is the current Fixed Income Manager of the Year, and in 2012, Mark Kiesel was awarded that accolade. Year to date, this group who was managing over three-quarters of PIMCO's assets at the time of Bill's departure, 92% of the assets that this group has managed at CIOs and with the group CIO have outperformed their benchmark before fees by 95% of our assets over 3 years and 98% over 5 years. So this new structure represents the natural evolution of our firm's portfolio management structure, and these are truly accomplished investors with superior track records. But PIMCO's resources go beyond our CIOs. PIMCO has built a deep bench of talent with extensive investment and leadership experience, including over 240 portfolio managers located across our seven trade platforms around the world. Speaking to our investment process, the investment committee has been and will continue to be a key decision-making body when it comes to our top-down investment strategies, and our sector and regional specialists around the world will continue to be the primary source of our bottom-up investment ideas for each and every PIMCO portfolio, just as it has been for decades. Bill Gross's responsibilities included he was the named portfolio manager on 37 public PIMCO funds, which totaled about $350 billion in market value. All of his portfolios, all of his funds, have been reassigned to a team of highly experienced investors. This team approach is reflective of how PIMCO operates. And let me be clear that PIMCO's investment process is institutionalized and has not changed. The U.S. Total Return Fund, the largest fixed income bond fund in the United States, will be jointly managed by Scott Mather, Mark Kiesel, and Mihir Wara. They are among the best fixed income managers in the world, 46 years of collective investment experience at PIMCO. Let me turn now to what were our client communication and outreach and some of the client reactions which we have received so far. First, we have global client teams activated all over the world across our 13 global offices and have been actively reaching out to update our clients regarding the new structure. We've been working since Friday and all weekend, and now into Monday in Asia and Europe. We manage nearly $2 trillion in assets. We have nearly 3,000 institutional investors, and we serve tens of millions of individual investors around the world. The vast majority of our clients are standing with PIMCO. Some of our largest investors, such as CalPERS, has already stated publicly that they are remaining with PIMCO, although they do intend to evaluate us carefully. We've also spoken with some of the largest sovereign wealth funds around the world, and I've made those calls personally, who have reaffirmed their commitment to PIMCO. In addition, one of the largest global institutional consultants has also issued a highly supportive report on PIMCO's new portfolio management leadership. Yet for some of our clients and consultants, these organizational changes will trigger a review of our team and our processes. We welcome that review. We are actively working together with our clients as they are researching our new leadership team. In other cases, consultants and clients who previously viewed the uncertainty regarding Bill Gross' succession as a negative, preventing a recommendation for PIMCO, now with this new leadership structure in place, this uncertainty has been lifted. Otherwise, it's really too early to provide an estimate, as Michael suggested, it's really too early to provide an estimate on potential flows and subsequent impact on our profits. So I'll stop there and end my remarks at this point.
Thank you, Doug. And now we turn it over to Dieter, please.
Yeah, thank you very much, and also a warm welcome to the call from my side. I have only two key messages at this point in time. Number one is, as we did not say anything in our ad hoc communication, which means there is actually nothing to say. Our group outlook is unchanged, and that means, as we said at the half-year results, upper end of the range of 10.5 billion is in reach, and also we will not change our timeline for the dividend communication. We will come back with a dividend policy before year end, and that is completely unchanged.
Great. Dieter, thank you very much. I think that leaves a good time now for questions, and please feel free to ask.
Thank you. We will take our first question from Farooq Hanif from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for setting up this call and taking my question. I just have two questions. Could you talk a little bit more about conversations you may have had with clients and institutional investors leading up to this day? Because you've obviously made a lot of changes, and therefore it's not a new subject with them, you know, to broach, you know, about succession. So can you talk a little bit about how, you know, how much actually this would be a surprise? And the second thing is, could you talk a little bit about how defensive your kind of cost-income ratio could be if you do see, you know, I'm making numbers up here, but, you know, if you saw 350 billion, you know, leaving over time from your fund, you know, what, how variable is your prospect to deal with that on from profitability point of view? Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for the question. I would gladly pass that on to Doug.
So let me answer the. I'll address each of the questions in turn with respect to the conversation with clients prior to Bill's resignation on Friday. Really, this goes back to earlier this year when Mohamed Al-Aryan resigned from PIMCO as our CEO and co-CIO. There were a number of questions about succession planning. We've always had a succession plan at PIMCO. This dates back and took on further definition in 2013, actually. So over a year ago at a managing director offsite conducted here in California where all of our managing directors, we gave greater focus to this. Now, when we had co-CIOs, it was always the presumption, both by us and I think the market as well, that if one of our CIOs couldn't perform in their duties for whatever reason, the other CIO would easily step in. So upon Mohamed's departure, the executive committee of PIMCO, along with the senior leadership, engaged in a process to fully specify a succession plan for our CIO. That plan included the as Michael alluded to earlier, changing our structure at the top of our portfolio management group, the advent of the deputy CIOs that was placed last January, and other measures that were fully specified in terms of how a protocol in terms of selecting a new CIO, which was activated and then was culminated by the vote of our managing directors. We were asked those questions by clients prior to Bill's decision to leave on Friday. We responded to them. In many respects, what has happened and the steps we have taken now provides clarity. So Of course, we've got some explaining to do as we introduce these new people, but I think they've also been given an opportunity, and our clients have responded even prior to Friday and to this week as they've begin to further understand who these individuals are. And remember, please, they manage already, before Bill left, over three-quarters of PIMCO's assets. And each of them in their own right have very top-ranked, very superior track records. So this process is ongoing. Looking forward, our plan is to have a spoken conversation with every institutional client around the world next 48 to 72 hours. Similarly, we're going to be reaching out to all of our distribution partners around the world and communicating with individual investors through various means of electronic and digital communication with them. Turning to the impact on our cost-to-income ratio, our cost base is highly flexible. We estimate that over 50% of our cost base is directly variable with revenues. So to your question, should our revenues fall, and we anticipate a height redemption during the early stages. That's to be expected with any transition of a senior person. We're ready for that. Importantly, from an expense point of view, we've outsourced a large portion of our operations, and this expense is tied directly to our asset base. So there is a considerable flexibility in our how we can manage our expenses in the event that outflows occur.
Okay, thanks very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next question, please.
We will take our next question from Michael Huttner from J.P. Morgan. Go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you very much. My first question is, why are there no non-compete agreements? It seems certainly on this side of the fence, they're quite common. It just seems so odd. And then the other question is, like Farouk asked on the economic, does the structure of the size of the bonus pool change will be close to departure? In other words, if the bonus pool was 30% of revenues and he himself was entitled to, say, 10, the drop to 20 or 25%? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Great, Michael, thanks. Doug, you want to answer the questions?
Certainly. With respect to, and I know in Europe, the commonly used term is a garden leave. Why was there not a garden leave? It's our practice, it's PIMCO's practice, to adopt the appropriate policy consistent with local labor law practices. And where possible, we do have required enforceable notice periods and non-competition agreements. However, here in the state of California, it is generally not possible to prevent an employee from resigning immediately and then promptly joining a competitor. And the second question was with respect to the bonus pool, and we don't comment on matters of compensation. I would focus our attention on we're going to institute further retention packages to ensure that we retain our key people. And so we're actively looking at those. Our compensation committee, we have a very competitive compensation program, but we're also looking at instituting further measures to retain and attract top-flight talent.
Okay, so from that, I take it that there's no downward flex here.
Michael, it's Dieter here. That's correct. That is new.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
From Berenberg, we will now take our next question from Peter Elliott.
Thank you. Just one more question for me, please. Clearly, this news has introduced some uncertainty into the division which has the highest remittance ratio in the group. And I know it's a very hypothetical question, and we're still 3 months away. But I was just wondering if you wanted to comment at all as to, what impact, that sort of uncertainty might or might not have on any eventual decision on sort of dividend policy in near term or longer term. Thank you.
Yeah. Peter, it's Peter here. I think when you think through a dividend policy and then communicate it, it should always be a multi-year solution. And the same as I assume you have baked in your three-year EPS forecast, key man risk and key man changes, we would always do the same in a dividend policy. Therefore, I think from our perspective, it will not change what we have planned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next one, please.
We will take our next one from Andy Broadfield from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Two questions, please. The first is just on the cost flexibility you spoke of before. I think you mentioned 50% of the cost base was effectively variable. How much of that 50% then is effectively variable comp? Because that conflicts slightly with the comment you just made about strengthening, if you like, the incentives for those key people to remain. Second question, I hope it's not too competitively sensitive, but given the concerns around outflows and speed of redemptions, just wondering what you can or have been able to do so far, or indeed if there is liquidity risk around some of those assets that will potentially create a, I guess, a spiral of forced selling, underperformance, and further redemptions. Thank you.
Andy, thanks. Good opportunity for Doug to specify a little bit about flexibility. Maybe, you know, that needs a little clarification. And then on the liquidity, which I think is a good question.
So with regard to the cost flexibility in the variable compensation, about 35%, 30 to 35% of that 50% that I referred to earlier is with respect to the variable compensation provisions in our compensation plan. With regard to cash management and liquidity, we've entered this transition in a very strong liquidity position, not just the total return fund, but all of PIMCO's portfolios and separate accounts. This has to do with several factors. The first is our positioning, and the second is our secular view, which is, I think, has been widely publicized, the new neutral. And as a result, we have run our portfolios through the entirety of this year with a very high quotient of liquidity. We monitor flows. We have forecasting mechanisms to anticipate future flows. And I think it's important to remember that across the wide spectrum of PIMCO portfolios, we do operate and invest in the largest, most liquid sectors of the fixed income markets. If you look at the total return fund, for example, it's roughly one-third invested in mortgage-backed securities, one-third in treasuries, and one-third in corporates. So two-thirds of the portfolio is in highly liquid tradable mortgages and treasuries. PIMCO has never restricted fund flows from any mutual fund. Even during periods of 2008, 2009, during the financial crisis, and of course market liquidity conditions were rather extreme after the paper remarks by Chairman Bernanke last year, we've provided liquidity to all of our clients and continue to work to improve our liquidity processes since then. The Total Return Fund specifically has met daily liquidity over the last 16 months, where we've seen approximately $70 billion of withdrawals, which gives us confidence that our tried and tested liquidity processes are sufficiently robust to meet any additional client requests.
Thank you, Doug. Next question, please.
We will now move to Andrew Ritchie from Autonomous. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Three quick questions for Doug, I think. Doug, in the press release on Friday from PIMCO, you talked about you had disagreements, war disagreements with Bill in recent months about where PIMCO was going forward, is the word you used. But now he's departed. What changes going forward? Maybe just I'm a bit confused as to what was it that was his presence was preventing the firm doing. Is it more diversification of strategies, or maybe just clarify and follow up that press release on Friday? Second question is just factual questions. In terms of the institutional versus retail split, we know what it is for PIMCO as a whole. For Bill Gross's assets, is it similar? So it's 60-40, roughly institutional retail. And finally, in relation to the previous answer, I think you suggested that two-thirds of the total return fund was in highly liquid strategies. I mean, is that true of the whole of the $350 billion, so in other words, including the two or three large other funds that Bill Gross managed? Are they all sort of two-thirds liquid, one-third illiquid strategies? Thanks.
Doug, please.
Sure. So let me take each of those three questions in turn. First, you're right about the press release that referred to fundamental differences. I will share very clearly that those differences did not pertain to client portfolio investment strategy. Rather, they were with regard to several non-investment strategy issues. The strategic direction of PIMCO, the resourcing and its management style, and our media strategy. So those were the ones that broadly were at issue with the bill, and as a result, this decision to resign. With regard to the composition of the portfolios that Bill manages, the institutional versus retail, and recognize that this nomenclature of individual and institutional investors becomes increasingly blurred as all of our funds, we are on more investment platforms and provide more access to fixed income markets than certainly any other active manager in the world. So there's many channels by which investors, both institutional and individual, gain access to our products and funds. But our estimates are that approximately 70% of our assets that were managed by Bill are currently held by individuals through brokerage accounts, through retirement platforms, and other channels. Roughly 30% are institutional investors who come through into our funds. And that's what I'm describing to you is primarily the total return fund. If you look at some of the other funds, the individual investor percentage is probably a bit higher than that.
Okay.
With regard to your third question, which was about liquidity, if we look across the portfolios, not just the total return fund, but across all the portfolios, we have over $350 billion of liquidity. So our liquidity position is very solid, and as you can imagine, we're closely monitoring the flows. We're closely monitoring all of our funds. We do this as a routine. This is not an emergency plan in any respect. We have the processes in which we do this daily. In any case, we do liquidity projections, raise liquidity in advance of flows. That is our process here, and we will continue to do so.
So what you're saying is the $350 billion liquidity you regard as fundable across all strategies. Is that fair?
I would just simply say that we have ample liquidity to respond to any client redemptions or withdrawals.
Okay, and just finally to clarify the answer to the first question. Basically, what you're saying is the changes that were made in January embodied the direction the executive team led by you were taking PIMCO in, and it was that kind of those kind of changes where there was friction. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm not gonna comment on the specifics on that. I would just simply say that we've been very plain about the future of PIMCO. We have evolved this firm over the last 10 years, and certainly over the last 5 years, we now invest in the full spectrum of fixed income risk, both in the securitized markets and the unsecuritized markets, where we have built a very large alternatives business. We're building an active equity franchise, and that's the future direction of the firm.
Okay. Thanks very much.
We will now move to William Hawkins from KBW. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you very much. My first question, I hope this isn't repeating Andrew's, but I wasn't quite clear. You mentioned the amount of money that Bill Gross is managing in the public funds. I'm not quite clear about what his role was in what you guys call the non-traditional funds. So the, sort of the two-thirds of the fund that are non-traditional, how much of that was he responsible for running directly, and how important was he in the mandate acquisition process for that part of the business? Presumably quite important. Then secondly, I presume it's very early days, but do you guys see an opportunity to enhance further the synergies between PIMCO and Allianz? Historically, Allianz has taken a very clear hands-off approach to PIMCO, and it appears that Bill Griffiths has been a key reason for that. That's often led to the criticism of the conglomerate discount for Allianz in its relationship with PIMCO. Do you think there may be opportunities for more cooperative and deeper relationship between the two businesses now? And then thirdly, you made it clear about the why there are no non-compete issues in the contract. But I'm still wondering if you guys are sort of preparing any active defense against what could be quite targeted attacks on your funds by Bill Gross and his new house. Because whilst, as you say, they can't have a non-compete agreement, presumably there are still fiduciary responsibilities that he owes to PIMCO and Allianz. Thank you.
Okay, Doug.
So if you – let's take each of those questions in turn, if I may. If we look at the scope of Bill Gross's direct portfolio management responsibilities, the assets that he managed, they were localized within our core bond complex. In fact, to be even more specific, our core U.S. bond complex, most notably the Total Return Fund, but also some of the other funds that he managed as well. And we have, as I explained and as I shared with you through our press release, we have moved to a team approach, taking truly our best investors, some of our best investors, Scott Mather, Mark Kiesel, and Mihir Wara, to assume those responsibilities immediately. We also have a team of generalist portfolio managers, a large team of generalist portfolio managers, who have already been managing a good bit of those assets already. If you look at the, and back to my earlier comment, over three-quarters of PIMCO's assets before Bill's departure were the lead portfolio manager was a different individual, a different portfolio manager, a different team. So with regard to mandate acquisition, Bill was our CIO and of course, had a large presence. But the reason people choose us and the reason people ultimately will stay with us is our investment performance, our process, and our performance. And if you look at the assets and the strategies and the portfolios that we manage and that have been managed by the other CIOs and teams around the world, we're really at top of the rank of track records. So I think as I look forward, to your question, I think we're in a very solid position with respect to new business and retaining our current business. Already, some of our largest clients around the world, particularly those in Asia and Australia, who I was speaking to for most of the evening here in California, have already committed their support to us. So I'm confident that the vast majority of our clients will stand with us. With regard to Allianz, Allianz is our partner. We have been part of the Allianz Group for 15 years. They are in close communication with Allianz. They are a partner. We always look for new ways to work with them, whether it's here in the United States, some of their annuity products, or other parts of across the world with respect to Allianz's insurance businesses in Germany, across Europe, and elsewhere. We're always looking for opportunities. Allianz not only is our partner, they are our largest partner, and we work very hard to serve their interests with dedicated portfolio management and service teams around the world.
Maybe the answer for the non-compete, Doug?
Thank you. Thank you, Michael. As I referred to earlier, our employment policies are consistent with the rules and regulations in each of the local jurisdictions where we have offices. We also have a very competitive compensation program. Our people are typically paid at the very top end of industry standards. We measure that each year as we go through our annual compensation process. But we're also now looking at additional retention opportunities with respect to financial incentives that we may use to continue to retain our top talent here. But I think there's another important element to this, which is as a result of moving to away from a founder-led structure to a team-led structure, that this is going to provide for more inclusion, more participation, more engagement by a broader set of portfolio managers and a broader set of PIMCO professionals than it ever has before. And that itself is the largest incentive to stay at PIMCO.
Thank you, Doug. William, I would like to give a little bit more flavor to your question of synergies. I think the market does not really recognize yet how large these synergies are because, remember, PIMCO is managing the largest part of our insurance assets and it's a very, very good track record. I think that is the biggest, most important synergy between PIMCO and ourselves. Then we have increasing product cooperation when it comes to, you know, how do we manage to get away from accumulation only and the decumulation cycle. There, obviously, PIMCO plays a key role. And I would add, you know, all the activities that probably have no financial benefits, but they're the risk management side, risk assessment side, on the economic outlook, and on the advisory activities that we are undergoing together. So I think this is a much closer cooperation than the market recognizes so far. Now, as Doug has a very, very busy day ahead of him, and he needs to go into his next calls, you know, very soon, I would ask maybe we can have one more question with him, and then obviously Stan myself will stay to answer more questions. So please, one more question for Doug.
We will take our next question from Nick Holmes from Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Thank you very much. Actually, my question is for you, Michael. So perhaps you'd like to take somebody else instead of me and come back to me.
Great. Nick, thank you very much. We'll turn back to you in a second. Please, one more question for Doug.
We will take our next question from Thomas Seidel from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Indeed, I have two questions for Doug. I think one, in terms of the total return fund, which obviously is the biggest here, you told us 70% is retail, 30% is institutional. Now, how does this look in terms of stickiness? Is it fair to say that retail is less sticky than the institutional? And within retail, how would you say how much of the business is, you know, easy to defend and how much is more likely to go away? Secondly, the Morningstar ratings are all under review, as far as I understand. In your experience, how much does it influence, you know, the outflow situation? And thirdly, was there a consideration, or why wouldn't consider right now bringing one of Arian back to play with the change at management at PIMCO?
So let's talk about the total return fund. Back to my earlier reference, and the 70% retail, 30% institutional. A large part of the retail, of that retail segment, is defined contribution money, approximately 40%. About 40% of the 70 is defined contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, for a large segment of that 70%, those investors are receiving some form of professional advice with respect to their overall wealth management and with regard to PIMCO, I'm sure. And those investors, I imagine, will be having conversations with their advisors over the course of this day and through this week. And we are in active engagement with all of our distribution partners around the world, helping them understand the changes, informing them, answering all of their questions. In fact, when I leave here, that's where I'm headed, to a large call with one of our large distribution partners. With regard to Morningstar, indeed, they are an influential, they have an influential role in the mutual fund marketplace, particularly here in the United States. We have already been in contact with Morningstar. We met with their team yesterday to describe our changes. They met with our key portfolio managers, Dan Iveson and others, and I imagine that they will be making their own assessments, and we will work closely with them just as we have for the last several decades. With regard to Mohammed El Aryan, we have nothing but the highest regard for Mohammed. He is he made an important imprint on this firm during his time here, and we highly respect him.
Great, Doug. Thank you very much. You have a good day, and thanks for being available for this call so early. And now we turn it back to Nick. Thanks for being so fair to leave question time for somebody else.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes,
absolutely. Yes, we are.
Yes, I just wanted to come back, Michael, to the synergies you were discussing, and I wanted to ask you two things. The first is, are these really enough to justify your keeping PIMCO in the longer term? And the and secondly, what does Bill Gross's departure actually due to your view of those synergies? Does it make you more or less determined to keep PIMCO? Thank you.
Look, for me, I'm not questioning, you know, the PIMCO with Bill Gross or without Bill Gross. I think it's a really, and I mean it's genuine. It has been such a great contributor to IAM's success, and not only, you know, as sort of asset management unit, but because it constantly enhances, you know, the value of our client money in the life insurance business and so on. I think it's a real differentiator vis-a-vis our competitors. So now, obviously, there's always a large interest in creating more synergies. Now, sometimes when you want to create large synergies, you know, you're creating large dis-synergies because this is a highly focused business where I think they're doing very well in focusing on managing client money as well as possible. And, you know, I'm looking, and Jay Ralph is looking very closely at any demand from our organization to, you know, involve them in projects and so on, where we clearly want to understand what is the benefit and what is the resource drag on their side and our side. So it's a real good cooperation that I think works for them as well as for us.
Thank you for that. Can I just press you with one follow-up question, which is, do you think the synergies that you discussed could be developed further? I mean, for example, it doesn't seem to be very much focused on capital-light products, capital-light savings products, insurance savings products, that is, Allianz. I mean, you mentioned these synergies, but to be honest, they don't seem to be very much in evidence. And I just wondered whether you think that you will be able to do significantly more in that sort of area.
So this one is an area that I explicitly addressed. I think they are very valuable in the product development process when it comes to, you know, how do we make the shift from accumulation to decumulation. Obviously, for hybrid products, capital light products, I didn't want to exclude that one.
And Nick, it's Dieter here. I think that the capital light products, just to see it as the unit linked and term products, that is in the current environment not good enough. And I think we have actually moved it to the next level with our hybrid products and focus on fixed index annuities in the U.S. And that is only possible when you are able to run complex income strategies, because you must be able to invest relative to a liability benchmark, managing credit spreads in a risk-friendly way, and that is actually key for a life business going forward. And therefore, I think we are already on the next phase of life businesses.
Okay, so, sorry, just final question. we can conclude that you remain fully committed to PIMCO going forward?
Definitely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick.
We will take our next question from Vinit Malhotra from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, thank you for this opportunity. I was just curious about one thing, which, just going back to the control that Munich will now exercise in PIMCO, I'm assuming from this conversation that there is not much change to that. And equally, it's good to hear thoughts about this new structure and the new number of team structure. Usually, is asset management better off in a more individualistic environment or team environment? And this is just want to know your thoughts on these two topics, please. Basically, control and how would teams work, if a good or bad for PIMCO. Thank you.
I'm not really sure, Vinit, that I really understand what you're asking.
I was trying to frame it because Doug is not here anymore, so I was trying to frame it more. I was just trying to frame it in the sense that with so many, with more teams and probably more bureaucracy in place, is the investment decision-making process still going to be as good as it was in your view? And probably it is, but just want to hear if those things come up in your thinking or conversation as well.
I think the management structure now is much clearer, frankly, because, you have a group CIO that has not changed, but now you have, for every asset class, one CIO instead of having six deputy CIOs, which I think from an evolution point of view is a real progress.
I think Doug did not go into the details of the team approach. It does not mean that in a team everybody is commenting and directing on the topic. I think they are all specialists in their areas, and actually it is just being combined to the wisdom of this team for the top-down strategies. The bottom-up contributions anyway comes from the individual portfolio managers.
Sure. And at the margin, the relationship between PIMCO and Allianz also is not changing much, I presume, that now there's no much more control that you're thinking of exercising on that subsidiary, if you like.
Well, I think that is another misperception in the market that we are not exercising control. I think it's a real good example of exercising as much control as needed and not over-managing or micromanaging, a very successful unit.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
So maybe we take one more question, and then we leave everybody to some money again.
We will take our next question from Michael Haid from MainFirst Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Just one question. You make the distinction between traditional fixed income products and non-traditional fixed income products. Just for clarification, is it right that the assets overlooked by were predominantly traditional plain vanilla fixed income products? And if so, is it fair to assume that the assets at risk at the moment are predominantly traditional fixed income products?
The first part is that's absolutely correct. He worked more on the core strategies or traditional in the nomenclature, which are more U.S. businesses benchmarked by Barclays Equity, to say it simply in financial terms. I think going forward, there was anyway a movement from this strategies to the non-core, non-traditional. And that was actually a big driver already for the positive net inflows in 2013, when you all remember that we had already there some core traditional outflows and the high net inflows were in the non-traditional. And I think that is probably now going to be in this direction.
Great. May I suggest, that we'll
end here. Some of you may see Dieter tomorrow in London. Otherwise, Dieter and myself are available next week when we do our roadshow in the U.S. and happy to answer all the questions during these occasions. Thank you very much for your interest and stay sympathy on Allianz. Thanks.